Welcome to Back to School, a mini-series from the Sizzle podcast. I'm Dr. Joe Taylor, an educational psychologist, and every episode I invite a guest on to talk about their experiences of education as a child, and then we see if we can draw some links between those experiences and how they might be thinking about education and learning and the workplace as an adult. Today's guest on Back to School is Loic Menzies. Loic is a researcher and an education policy specialist. He's edited Young People on the Margins and founded the Centre for Education and Youth. It was really amazing talking with him, and I feel like he was able to reflect on education from a personal and a systemic perspective, which really added another dimension to this episode. So let's get into it. Loic, it's so lovely to have you here and have the chance to talk with you.
It's great to be here.
Oh, yeah, it feels really fun because I imagine this working on many different levels, because we're going to be talking about your experiences of education, and then of course you can bring in your perspective as an educator and someone who researches education too. So it's all going to feel really meta and multi-layered to me.
Excellent.
But I wonder how you describe your work. If someone was just meeting you, you know, how would you introduce yourself?
Yeah, good question. I guess in a way, being a bit of an education obsessive is probably the easiest summary. But my focus is generally on research and policy, and so more and more on the kind of policy level of education. So yeah, I've kind of worked at different levels of work, and so I think now that it's now quite a while since I left teaching and youth work, so more and more I feel quite distant from a classroom ultimately, and so nowadays I tend to say that I kind of focus on researching education policy.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, and I'm kind of plunging my memory for when I first met you, and I think it was because when I was training to be a teacher, you were one of the tutors who were helping train teachers.
Yeah. Did a bit of that, particularly, the first few years after I left teaching. I was I did a lot of work on the Schools Direct programme and the graduate teacher programme at Canterbury Christchurch. So that was, that was one of the first things I did after leaving the classroom. And then, with kind of Teach First as well, and that kind of community too.
So I suppose, I'm just noticing you have some experience as a teacher and training teachers and also researching education to kind of help that close that feedback loop and feed it all back into the system. And so this podcast concept is thinking about how our experiences of education as a child might be linked to or influencing our thoughts about education in the workplace as an adult. And so if I was to pop us into a time machine and go back to your primary school education, I don't know what kinds of memories come to mind for you.
Oh, all sorts. I've got, like, primary school was a really happy time for me. I really loved my primary school. Funnily enough, I actually now live a few hundred meters from it, so I see the kids going to it most mornings. And I always think, oh, they're lucky. I hope they have as good experience as I did there. And funnily enough, I bumped into the head teacher of a school the other day, as in the head teacher from when I was there, at the local Lido, and he was asking me some similar questions. He was asking me what I remembered from school. So it was really nice to chat to him. And there was, I think one of the things I remembered that I was telling him about, which I guess is relevant here too, was just I was a bit of an activist already as a kid. And so I was constantly going up to the headmaster's office with whatever my latest kind of campaign or thing was, whether it was like fundraising for a charity or whether it was campaigning on something I didn't think was fair in the school and stuff. And I had a lot of respect for the fact that he was always willing to make the time, and that I used to go in and we'd have these very adult conversations where I didn't at all feel like I was a kind of annoying kid. where he'd take me very seriously and have a very kind of business-like conversation with me about whatever issue was in my head. And I think that, and it, yeah, to this day, I kind of keep that, the sense of kind of agency that that gave me in terms of being, not being scared to go to people in authority and say, okay, this is what I think, and this is what I'm experiencing. So that's what I said to him when he said, oh, what do you remember from primary school? And it was nice to be able to say thank you to him for that as well.
That's such a lovely chance to pass that on. And I'm just connecting with how little feedback some educators get about how people experience being in their class or in their school. And yeah, that must have been a really nice conversation. And you've reminded me of myself being in primary school as well, actually, and a similar memory of the head teacher running down the corridor on their way somewhere and me taking them to task because you weren't meant to run in the corridor.
And how did they respond?
Well, they responded like, you're so right, and then kind of walked off. And it could have gone either way.
Yeah, yeah.
It really could have gone either way. And I think that those early opportunities to show children that, yeah, we can, you know, we can all follow the same rules, or we can have conversations about things that feel important to you, or just because you're in a position of power doesn't mean you shouldn't be able to answer questions. You know, these are really massive, yeah, massive things to be experiencing. Can you remember how old this activist phase, how old you were?
Oh, it was throughout my primary school time. I mean, I definitely remember it more in kind of Key Stage 2. But that is, so I imagine it would have been more then, but certainly, yeah, from like year three onwards, I was a regular visitor to the head's office for these different things that took my fancy were getting my go at the time.
And a word that stood out listening to you was agency. And I don't know how you connect to that word now as a fully fledged adult.
Yeah, I think the reason I pull it out is because I think a lot of people have not had that, and therefore feel like, you know, they can't go knocking on the doors of power and saying, look, here's what I think about policy, for example. In, you know, in my role, I spend a lot of time telling policymakers what I think about education and issues affecting young people, or what I'm hearing in my research. You know, there's a lot of researchers who don't. I've been doing workshops recently, for example, for academics on how to engage with policymakers, and it's, you know, a lot of them do not have that sense of agency. They don't have a sense that they can just, you know, get in touch with people in power and say, look, this is what I've just done, this piece of work, and I think you need to know it. Whereas I've just never really hesitated to do that, and obviously a lot of the time the door is closed and people don't listen to you, but I'm quite happy kind of continuing to bash at that door until someone listens, which I don't think everyone feels empowered to do. And I think given the way, if the door had been thrown in my face at primary school when I went and did that, then I might be feeling quite different about it now.
Yeah, I can really hear that. And it's, yeah, such a lovely phrase, knocking on the doors of power. And yeah, I can really see how for researchers, having those conversations would be really helpful. Just kind of, how do we help people hear about this important research? You know, what can happen with it?
Yeah, it's hard, right? There's such a, I think over recent years, there's been such a breakdown in relation, well, over quite a bit long period of time now, between a kind of academic world of education research and the policy world. There's a lot of bridges that have been burnt on both sides. And I'm really interested to be part of this, of the conversation about how we can move on from that. And it's really interesting talking to academics about that.
Yeah. Well, hopefully you can, yeah, straddle that gap a little bit. And yeah, if we were to get back in that time machine and move a bit closer to the present day, to secondary education. So, you know, between, I suppose, the years of 11 and 16 in your life, I don't know what memories come up for that time period.
Yeah, that was a very different period. So I kind of made this decision to go from this very, very cute, very lovely, very middle class primary school to a secondary school that, at the time, the catchment's changed a lot now, but at the time had a kind of reputation for being the kind of challenging, more diverse school and so on, in Cambridge. And it was a much tougher place. There was a lot of bullying, a lot of violence, and so it was really different. I had generally, I'd say, largely decent experience there, but it felt like I had to kind of fight my corner a lot more. And so yeah, my memories from there feel a lot more kind of embattled, I think. Sometimes it was harder there to kind of like keep hold of myself and where I wanted to go and what I wanted to do and who I wanted to be. And so that it was a really different period, but I kind of wanted that contrast. I'd chosen that school because I wanted to experience something a bit different.
That's such an interesting reflection. And I wonder if you can remember what Haas Loic was thinking in terms of craving that contrast.
I was aware during that time at that primary school that I was being wrapped in cotton wool. And so it was a desire for something different, but also to like meet different people. I was always really interested in like being around different people with different experiences and so on. And that's kind of what I wanted from my secondary school experience.
I mean, it's not planned, but it's really interesting noticing how your memories of your education are sparking memories of my education.
Really? Yeah.
And I think, you know, my secondary education was in a school which sounds similar to the one you're describing. And one of the real memories and experiences that I think I connect with was that sometimes it felt hard to learn in terms of the position that the teachers were in, you know, lots of change and turnover, but also the fact that for all different reasons, you know, there were children who would be like throwing things or starting fights or getting upset. And so, you know, trying to regulate your attention on what you've got in front of you wasn't always easy. And, you know, I say that purely to describe and not to judge, but it was something I found quite hard at the time. And I kind of, I can remember deciding, well, I'm going to have to do a lot of my learning outside of school.
Yeah.
And I suppose I view you as someone who loves learning. And I don't know how that was for you at this secondary where you were having to kind of use your words, fight your corner a bit.
Yeah. I mean, I remember a specific moment, actually. I remember being sat in a business studies lesson with, like, as you say, like chairs flying or whatever and all that, and the teacher just basically being bullied herself and so on in this classroom. And I was quite academic. I had this dream of doing PBE at Oxford, like lots of people who do policy, interested in politics and stuff. So that was like my dream, and I had, you know, all the odds were stacked in my favor. My parents were quite academic themselves. I was growing up in Cambridge, I had the odds stacked in my favor. And yet I remember sitting there as all of this was going on and thinking, like, how on earth could that be possible? Like, that's not going to happen. Don't be daft. Like, you're not going to go from this experience to that. So, you know, that's, I think that's quite striking, because given that, yeah, I had all those privileges and all that opportunity, that I was doubting myself in that situation. Like, it's no surprise that people haven't got all those odds stacked in my favor in that situation, are doubting themselves, or doubting their ability to go on to do what they want to do. I think to keep on the path, in those situations can be pretty tricky.
So I'm immediately curious about what changed between that experience of doubt and then kind of, you being able to go to university and you know, now work in an academic research field. I don't know whether that happened later or maybe it was the next period. I don't know, but something happened.
Yeah, I mean, I think that was like a moment of doubt, but at the same time, I like you say, you were able to say, well, I'll do a lot of my learning outside. I remember just kind of buying the revision guides and just getting on with it and doing the work. And there were other teachers who maybe were able to hold the class more and so on. So I did really well. I got really good GCSEs and so on. So that was fine. And then I went on to a sixth form, which was Hills Road Sixth Form College in Cambridge, which is one of those sixth forms that does a lot of selection and that is really academic. It's kind of all the kids of the academics and so on and end up coming back together there from whatever secondary school they've gone to. And that was it was almost like a mini university experience. And I think the pipeline from there into Oxford and Oxbridge and all of that kind of stuff is up universities is pretty well trodden. So it's not, you know, it's not like there was a particularly difficult journey and a difficult journey from there. Then I went on and did that. And then I think the more unusual part was then finding my way into research after leaving teaching. That was a less expected and less well-trodden route.
I'm wondering whether there are any bright sparks of memory from secondary school. I'm just aware that I've only heard about, you know, chairs flying and maybe that was the experience, but I'm just wondering if you can pick out any brighter sparks from that.
I mean, there were definitely like periods of really good friendships and stuff like that. I think I really enjoyed it once it got up to kind of key stage four, and there was a bit more the moments of kind of freedom to be able to, you know, go out at lunchtime with friends and like get out of a building and get away from it a bit. There were bits of the learning that I really enjoyed. Despite thinking of myself as a humanities kid rather than a sciencey kid, because I thought these were like separate boxes that you had to fall into for some reason. But I actually had like an amazing biology teacher, and I got really into biology. That became a subject I really enjoyed. So I used to love that. So there were definitely positives like that. There were some great opportunities. I remember in like year 11 or something, we got to try different sports in PE. And I remember really enjoying doing rowing as part of that, which we got a chance to do. So there's good points, but it's not the kind of happy fluffy memories that I have of primary school.
Yeah, and I've probably spoken to thousands of children now through my work, and I do think that that's quite a typical contrast, the experience of primary school and secondary school, and maybe that's a separate conversation, but interesting to notice that there is that difference.
Yeah, it's not unusual, is it? Yeah.
I wonder whether you have any memories that stand out of education as an adult. So, you know, that could be an undergraduate degree. It could be, you know, something else that stood out in terms of learning as an adult. But yeah, I don't know what comes to mind. I feel like maybe you've got quite a bit to choose from.
So I feel like I learned a huge amount since leaving school. And I think we often think of retreat school like it's the end of the road in terms of learning. But for me, it's like the bit that should set you up for the rest of the learning that comes afterwards. I've tended to, because I've kind of gone on this path of getting into research and getting into policy and so on, at each of those stages, I've realised I needed to learn a whole load of stuff. So whether it be when I first started doing qualitative research, say, when I set up the Centre for Education and Youth and started doing research projects there, I really enjoyed kind of buying a load of textbooks about how to do research and just working through them and asking and always feeling comfortable asking people who knew more than me to explain things and help me out. Similarly, 2 years ago, I left the Centre for Education and Youth, and I'm now working on a book about how policy gets made. So the last 2 years, I've just been reading piles and piles of books about politics and policy, and I've really enjoyed doing that. So I love that. I love that thing of kind of writing myself a reading list and working through it. That's been really good, and I think it's so important that you leave school being equipped to do that, and noticing some of the barriers too. Like, so for me, there's loads of stuff I'd like to be able to do that I find really hard to do because my maths isn't good enough. And so like noticing the fact that not having got those foundations of maths has ended up throwing up loads of hurdles later on that I would never have anticipated. And that kind of shapes some of my ideas about how actually, even if you don't think you want to learn something when you're at school, it's probably we should still get kids to learn those things, because at that point they don't know what's going to come in useful later on, and you want as many tools in your toolbox to be able to unlock that learning in the future.
Yeah, it's so hard to take that wisdom back to a different developmental stage. And,
yeah.
Gosh. I really hear you though. You know, there are people I know who have taken A-levels in their 30s because they decided they wanted to become a doctor, you know, and they had no idea when they were making those choices you know, 15, 16-year-old, like what kinds of things might I want to take?
Yeah.
The future them would be like, well, it's chemistry and biology and all of those kinds of things.
Totally.
It's tricky.
Yeah, I mean, that one started off early. And like at A-level, I ended up having to drop chemistry because I just didn't feel like my maths was up to scratch. Then at university, I was only able to do first year economics because my maths wasn't good enough for economics. Then when it comes to research, there's loads of times when I'd love to do more quantitative work than I'm able to do. And so it's incredible. And I still got an A at GCSE. It wasn't like I was horrendous at maths. But just not having the fluency with it, it just means that the barriers to entry are so much higher than they are in other areas where I feel more confident.
Yeah, it's so true. I was really struck by what you said, writing yourself a reading list. And, you know, I feel like I always meet people who are doing really interesting master's courses and I'm like, wow, I want to do that. And they often say, I'll send you the reading list. I'm actually...
Yeah, totally.
In a lot of ways that, you know, that's a huge chunk of what you get from these institutions.
Oh, completely.
Is like, start exploring these areas.
Yeah. I mean, when I left CFEY, I was thinking, oh, I'll go and do a master's in public policy. That was my initial plan. And then I realized actually, you know, if I had lots of things I wanted to write about that I'd observed from a world of Westminster over the last decade. And if I complemented that with some reading, then actually there was something to do. But what the first thing I did was download some reading lists from Masters in Public Policy and to start working through a lot of the canonical stuff. It's like just doing that can make such a big difference once you've got that stuff under your belt.
It is amazing what we can do with the internet in terms of accessing all of the content. You know, the content is out there.
Yeah, you still have to put in the legwork of a reading, and it's like finding the discipline to do your reading is always a struggle, I reckon.
So, I mean, I'm just thinking about what you've said as an adult and the learning and things that stood out. And I suppose I'm noticing that there's on one hand this empowered. I looked up the reading lists, I downloaded them, and I was disciplined enough to read the books. And then on the other hand, this I feel a little limited by some of my subject choices and maybe, you know, proficiencies or inclinations that I had as a child. And I don't know how it is hearing those kind of ends of the spectrum back. I don't know what you make of that.
Yeah, I think it's partly because I know I don't have too many constraints. I feel like I've got quite a lot of options. And so it's noticing where there is a slight constraint. So like, yeah, I've done the thing of kind of buying the maths books and learning a load of maths too, but it's still an area where there's less fluency. It's kind of more noticing where the edges of that agency are.
You're reminding me of, I forget how it fits into popular culture, but there's that kind of description of, you know, you change a few degrees here at the beginning of your journey, and then at the end of the journey, you end up miles off. And I don't know whether it's like a explorer metaphor or whatever, but you're making me think of that in terms of, choices as a child and impacts as an adult.
Yeah.
But I've been making notes as we've spoken, and I just want to say back some of the words that are jumping off the page and just see how they land with you. Happy. I mean, yeah, I have to say something about that. The first, you know, when we were talking about primary education, just your face when you were describing how happy you were, it really was something. So I wanted to take a moment for that. But yeah, some other words. So happy and lucky, activist, agency, fighting my corner, moments of freedom, writing myself a reading list. I don't know, hearing those words, I don't know if you can kind of, yeah, if you have any responses.
Yeah, I mean, like I'm not surprised to jump out because they're all things that are definitely like really important to me, and they're things that I think they look at how I kind of look at the world and see my experiences, definitely.
Yeah, maybe this is like a bit of a qualitative research joke, but if those were kind of some of our codes, I don't know how you might theme some of them.
Yeah, I guess there's something around kind of like, a lot of those things are sources of joy, but they're also kind of butting up their kind of responses to resistance as well, right? So it's like a kind of activism against where I perceive something to be wrong or to be a boundary, similarly like the fighting my corner. Yeah, that was often I was at secondary school in the whole era of Section 28 campaigns and horrendous homophobia and all of that kind of stuff. So they were all a lot of these things that kind of like butting up against limits on those freedoms and that happiness. But a sense of being in a position to fight against those things rather than being too disempowered by them.
Yeah, as you were speaking, there was near the word activist, I've written the word agency, and there's an interesting dynamic between the two, because activism does imply limits or oppression or boundaries, and agency implies being able to act respond to them. So
yeah, I think there's a big difference between kind of experiencing those injustices or those negatives but from a position of helplessness versus experiencing those things with a sense of agency and it not feeling inevitable.
Yeah. And so I suppose maybe the final question from me is around when we talk about these themes or you know, notice and explore these themes, whether you feel like you can relate to them from the present day in your own work.
I mean, for example, like whenever I'm writing about purpose of education and that kind of stuff, which is always like one of those things you have to, that needs to be out front of thing and clear. I always talk about things like, for me, I'm writing something at the moment about, for example, like writing the freedom to write your own life story is how the lens I look at the purpose of education through. And I think, how do different things contribute to the freedom to do that? And you can see that where I've talked about my values and the things that have been important to me, they are really closely linked to that idea of the agency to write your own life story and options and freedom and so on. And so I think about education always through like what doors are being opened and what things open doors, which things close doors.
Anything else you want to reflect on? We've kind of, speaking of opening doors and closing doors, we've kind of opened a door of a few different memory cupboards. I don't know how that was, taking a time machine back to different points of your education.
I think I feel okay, a little bit kind of British and self-conscious about talking about myself and those sorts of things, it's fun and interesting, but it's also a bit like, oh.
Yeah, exactly. The focus is on me now. Yeah, that could be quite awkward. Yeah, well, thank you for, taking the journey and for helping us to think a bit more about the purpose of education.
No, I think it's really important. I mean, everyone, you constantly, with education, everyone has an opinion on it because everyone's had an experience of it, and that's like shaped their mental model so much. But I think you're really right, and it's really interesting to unpick that and put people's thinking into perspective based on what's led to it.
Yeah, it's such an interesting truism that people have got opinions on education because they've been educated, they've experienced that, and I suppose, there is an element to these conversations which is about just helping to make that explicit, or, you know, helping people to connect those links up themselves. We don't always have the time in our busy lives to kind of take a moment.
Yeah, thanks for the chance to do it.
Oh, it's such a pleasure. And if people are interested in finding out more about your work or kind of following the progress of your writings, I don't know where they can find you.
Yeah, and so I mean, I know Twitter's having a rough ride at the moment, but I'm on Twitter a lot, but also on Threads and Instagram and the others. It was as Loic Menzies, LOICMNZS. Short surname. So yeah, you can find me there. I mean, I've written about a lot of the things we've talked about today in my last book, Young People on the Margins, and but also in a report I've just published called Balancing Act, which is all about the tensions in the education system and how we can kind of balance some of these tensions and the things that pull us in different directions. So that's kind of a couple of places where you can find out a bit more about some of my thinking on these things. And I'm also publishing something called Mapping the Way to Educational Equity soon, which is where I talk about some of those ideas that we've just been talking around purpose of education and so on.
Great. Well, I'll link to the things that are released and fingers crossed, people can check out the things that are arriving soon. You've been listening to the Sizzle podcast, and if you enjoyed today's episode, the best thing you can do to help is to subscribe to the Substack, and that way you'll get all new episodes straight to your email, and you'll be first up for articles, resources, and lots of other goodies. And also to share it, you know, send the podcast to people that you think might enjoy it. Catch you next time on the Sizzle podcast.